It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Pyongyang still defiant today as it warned of a nuclear test at any moment and any place in the face of what it calls U.S. aggression and hysteria. And the rogue state continues to provoke, trying but failing to successfully test a missile on Saturday, which saw it break up less than 15 minutes after takeoff. Over the weekend, President Trump reached out to numerous allies in the region, coming under fire for inviting President Duterte of the Philippines to the White House, following reports of his human rights violations. Others see it as a necessary compromise.
The United States needs these allies in Asia to cooperate with respect to North Korea, with respect to China and the South China Sea, for example. And so it's that classic sort of attempt to balance the strategic issues of importance to the United States against some of these issues like human rights and so on and so forth and the unsavory aspects of our allies.
Japan is also playing an increasingly significant role, dispatching its biggest warship to the area. The helicopter carrier Izumo is heading to refuel and resupply the USS Carl Vinson strike group, which the North Koreans have threatened to destroy, though they're not thought to have the capability to do so.
All right, that was Benjamin Hall on Fox News last night. This is Sandy Rios in the morning, and the reason I start with that is because I just want our priorities to be straight. I think in terms of potential danger, that's where it is, and I want to make sure that you're aware of it. Benjamin did a really great report last night. He went on to say this.
North Korea has also been threatening Australia with a nuclear attack, accusing the Aussies of blindly and zealously towing the US line. Today, the Prime Minister responded at an event to commemorate US and Australian cooperation in World War II.
Together, we're taking a strong message to North Korea that we will not tolerate reckless, dangerous threats to the peace and stability of our region.
But still, the key is China, which remains responsible for 90% of North Korea's trade, around $951 million in 2015. Yet there remain sticking points. The THAAD anti-missile defense system's deployment in South Korea is a major concern for China, which believes its powerful radar will be able to monitor its missile capabilities and undermine its nuclear deterrent. And China continues to build islands in the South China Sea, which the Philippines claims as theirs, meaning President Trump will have to carefully navigate regional politics. And over the weekend, Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, visited South Korea on an undisclosed visit, apparently to talk with the National Intelligence Director of that country. But what we're also seeing is a two-pronged approach from the White House. Not only are they showing their military might with the USS Michigan submarine and the USS Carl Vinson strike group, but also a gathering together of allies like Thailand, Singapore, Japan, Australia, South Korea, to put pressure not only on North Korea, but also on China, who remain the key to much of this.
All right, keep in mind that this has been building for decades now. And under the 8 years of Obama, nothing was done. China was just allowed to run roughshod over that part of the world and, of course, lay the groundwork for becoming dangerous to the entire world. And then, of course, we have North Korea that's just plain crazy. China at least has, they're crazy like a fox. They're a communist country who wants to dominate militarily, at least the military portion of their country. They have developed a very robust economy thanks to stealing our secrets and to these ridiculous trade deals we've made that, you know, the open markets, open borders people, the free trade guys, many of you listening, thought that was the gospel. And so China got rich and our workers got poor, and with the rest is history. But militarily, China was able to take that money and build up and build up. And North Korea has been, like I would say, sort of a feeding off of China there, that China is the main trader with North Korea. North Korea depends on them. They actually do business together. And I would say South Korea kind of has helped too. South Korea blusters about North Korea, but South Korea does not really want North Korea to change because they fear South Korea has become very wealthy, very stable, thanks to the pouring in of American dollars after the Korean War. They have built their economy in a major way. And, of course, South Korea's been totally evangelized, not totally, but tons of Christian ministries there. South Koreans are really the salt of the earth, and they are wonderful people, and many of them live here. Thank God they've enriched our country. But the government there sure as heck does not want North Korea to be flooding over the demilitarized zone and into their country. It's kind of like the situation with East and West Germany. When the wall came down, West Germany had to absorb the poverty of East Germany, and it took them a long time. And the Germans are very ambitious and hardworking, so they were able to recover. But it's a real blow to the economy to absorb the poverty of the next door neighbors. So that's what's happening. Just a couple of things about North Korea. The parents of that, remember that kid that was seen, he was on some school trip. Why in the world he ended up in North Korea? Don't ask me. I don't think they've ever explained that. And he was dressed in like a preppy, and the camera shows him taking a poster down of Kim Jong-il at the time. And he was arrested, and he's been in prison now for a year. It just struck me, you know, there's a metaphor there. There's this kid all dressed up, looks like, an all-American boy, probably a little spoiled, I don't know, and editorializing here, having no idea what he's up against, having no background, no context to understand that the world is not like the world he lives in. And so he, by doing this silly prank, he comes to a nation on a trip that he's ill-prepared for, does a dumb thing, and now he's in prison. And of course the punishment is too harsh. There's no question about it. His parents were on Fox and Friends yesterday begging Donald Trump to do something. And actually they said that they were encouraged by the Obama administration to say nothing, but now they were expressing their public appreciation to President Trump because they feel like he's at least trying to do something. And he's 22 years old now. He's got a 15-year sentence. Well, you can imagine the heartbreak of the parents. We can all imagine, and especially now when it looks like the tensions are increasing. It seems to me, I just don't know how likely it is that their son will be released. Doesn't seem like Kim Jong-un is in the mood to do anything favorable to the United States. But interestingly enough, China, a notice was uncovered and made public that the Chinese government is ordering the town of Dandong to recruit Korean Chinese interpreters. And now that's a town near the border with North Korea, and that looks like they may be preparing for some sort of invasion or maybe some sort of a flood across the border coming into northern Manchuria, which is where I visited back at around 2001. And then here's another interesting thing. I've talked about China. Actually, we're going to talk about China this Friday a lot on the show. They are instituting what they call Confucius Institutes in over 100 universities and 500 schools in America, K through 12, and they're teaching communist propaganda. It's an amazing story, and you'll want to tune in and listen to that. But along with that, just a little tease here, a woman from Sierra Vista, and I believe it's California. They don't know. You know what? It's Arizona. She went to a Walmart, and in her purse, she found a note that said, "Inmates in the Yingsheng prison in Gunji, China, are working 14 hours daily with no break, rest at noon, continue working overtime until 12 midnight, and whoever doesn't finish his work will be beaten. Their meals are without oil and salt. Every month, the boss pays the inmate 2,000 yuan. Any additional dishes will be finished by the police. If the inmates are sick and need medicine, the cost will be deducted from the salary. Prison in China is unlike prison in America. Horse, cow, goat, pig, dog. Literally, this means inhumane treatment." And it's not the first time people have found things stuffed in merchandise they bought in other places. Saks Fifth Avenue, Kmart. And I think it just puts in perspective, you know, I've mentioned to you before that if we stop this cheap labor and free trade that we've been talking about, to the extent that we've taken it, and we continue to have cheap goods, it's at that price. Because across the globe, prisoners are making those beautiful goods and suffering the way they are suffering. And I've seen that firsthand because I've met with the prisoners. I've told you that. And it is really, talk about a human rights abuse. And then now we have cheap goods. And at what price, really? I just think we have to be prepared. I know this is a very unpopular thing for me to say, but I'm telling you, we're going to have to pay more money for our things, and we're going to have to let Americans make them. We're going to have to protect our workers, and we're going to have less, and I think that will be a good thing. All right, a big domestic story, of course, is the budget. Mike Emanuel did a good report last night, and I have a lot to say about this, but let's listen to Mike first.
Congress is expected to pass this week a $1 trillion package to keep the government up and running through September. The bipartisan agreement was announced late last night. Vice President Mike Pence sold the plan this morning as meeting some key priorities.
$21 billion in defense spending in this bill. There's also a down payment on border security. I think the American people are encouraged to hear that since our inauguration, illegal border crossings are down 60+% in this country.
Yet the deal does not cut money to sanctuary cities or for Planned Parenthood. Democrats are celebrating protecting 99% of the EPA budget, boosting the National Institutes of Health funding by $2 billion, and stabilizing Puerto Rico's Medicaid program. House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi bragged in a Dear Colleague letter, quote, "In a defeat for President Trump, the omnibus does not fund the immoral and unwise border wall or create a cruel new deportation force." And some conservatives are expressing frustration.
I think the American people are disappointed in this. I've heard from some today, text messages, phone calls I've had today with people who are saying, why aren't we pushing more? Why aren't we trying to do more? Why aren't we fighting for the funding for the border security that we told everyone we were going to do?
Congressman Justin Amash of Michigan tweeted today, instead of defending status quo, GOP should be defending Constitution, rule of law, federalism, free speech, markets, responsible budgeting. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said the next funding deal in late September will include more of President Trump's priorities.
The 2018 budget will address those things, but this is a down payment on border security. It's a down payment on his ability to rebuild the military, and repealing and replacing Obamacare will address a lot of the other health care issues.
One issue with bipartisan support from lawmakers in places like West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio, coal country, is health benefits for retired miners.
This is a group of people that are more likely to have health problems than your average 40-year-old. And so this was really, really important.
All right, so that was the report, but I have a lot to say about this. Let me just put it this way. The headline from the Washington Post, the Daily 202, 8 ways Trump got rolled in his first budget negotiation. An article from CNS News, 1,665 pages. The GOP spending bill is longer than Obama's stimulus. And, of course, it was released at, 2 a.m. in the morning. They're supposed to vote on it on Thursday, which is day after tomorrow. And I want to read, I don't know if I'm going to have time to get through this. I don't think I am, and I want to spend time on it. You know what? I'm going to wait. I'll talk about this in the last segment, but I want you to hear yesterday. I don't think I have time for this either. All right, I'm going to cut that. Let me tell you what we're doing. I'm going to come back to the budget in the last segment, but coming up next, I want to talk about the May Day protest that happened yesterday. You know, May Day, you can forgive my voice, you guys. I'm having trouble overcoming this thing that I have, but I'm here. Just please put up with my my occasional disappearances at the microphone. But May 1st is National Workers' Day. It's a communist day. It's been a communist worldwide celebration since I was a kid and Russia was the Soviet Union. And now the communists here, we always call them the left, don't we? But they are really indistinguishable. Wreaked havoc yesterday, and we're going to talk about it a little bit. They didn't wreak as much havoc as they'd like to, but they're well on their way. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Climate change is real. This is Ken Ham on a mission to call the church back to God's Word and a new Reformation. I often hear secularists claim that creationists don't believe in climate change. Well, this is absolutely not true. There's plenty of observational evidence that climate's changed today and have in the past. For example, people used to farm in Greenland. What we do deny are the worldview-based assumptions behind many of the claims of climate change alarmists. Many of these assumptions rely on a belief in an old Earth. When you start from a biblical worldview, you get a different picture of Earth's history. A few thousand years ago, there was a global flood that radically changed the globe and climate. This flood brought on the Ice Age. Our climate is still settling down from Noah's flood.
Want to know more about a biblical perspective on climate change? Visit our Bible Upholding website to learn about the true history of the Earth and life at AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
President Trump says he's very pleased with the proposed bipartisan spending bill. Not pleased, but very pleased. But there's not all that much to be pleased about, unless you happen to be a liberal Democrat. President Trump promised to defund Planned Parenthood. He promised. So why does the spending bill include federal funding for Planned Parenthood? And what about that border wall? Not a single penny is allocated for building that wall, not even a brick. Remember the promise to cut a third of the EPA's budget? They're only going to lose about 1%. The Washington Post reports Democrats were shocked by how many concessions they were able to get from the Republicans, especially since the GOP controls the House, Senate, and the White House. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is giggling like a schoolgirl. But I reckon it's the GOP who's getting the last laugh at the expense of voters, who made the tragic mistake of putting their trust in a bunch of untrustworthy swindlers. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
From coast to coast, May Day protests turned violent. Tens of thousands of protesters attacking police officers and destroying businesses from the Pacific Northwest to Chicago to New York City in what is traditionally a labor march. In Portland, Oregon, self-proclaimed anarchists flooded the streets, setting fires and throwing smoke bombs and Molotov cocktails at law enforcement. A rioter seen wearing a ski mask, tossing a live flare into a police cruiser. 25 people dressed head to toe in black now under arrest for arson and assault there. And in Chicago, thousands of protesters marching through the streets. And in New York City, there where you are, more than 30 people arrested for refusing to disperse and take off those masks, which is illegal in New York City. And here in Washington, protesters gathered at the White House demanding Donald Trump has got to go. Even DNC Chairman Tom Perez addressed that unruly crowd. Several officers across the country, guys, were injured in these riots, but so far, all reports are that they are going to be okay. These demonstrations are held annually to celebrate International Workers' Day, but yesterday, it was anything but a celebration. And I should point out, just a note, having covered a lot of these protests, those folks in black are known as Antifa, or anti-fascist, and they intend to continue this sort of activity throughout the administration of Donald Trump.
All right, that was Griff Jenkins on Fox and Friends this morning. And of course, I told you that May Day, International Workers' Day, just to explain it further, this is a big day for communists. It has always been since I've known about communism. This was their big, they didn't have Christmas, they didn't have Thanksgiving, they didn't have Easter, but they had May Day, International Workers' Day, where they celebrated, you know, their, whatever, the ecstasy of communism, where everyone, one could be poor equally and have no freedom. So this is what, you know, this is what, and it has to be noted that Tom Perez, secretary, former Secretary of Labor, now the head of the DNC, was speaking at one of these. It's just, noted. To put a little bit more detail here, five people in Seattle were arrested. There were pro and anti-Trump demonstrators. That must have been interesting. They faced off, as they have been in the last few months. Some threw bottles, fired marbles from slingshots at officers. Nine officers were struck, nine people arrested. That's in Olympia, Washington, in Oakland, California. I actually can't read that because it's cut off. But, of course, that happened. Griff did a really good job kind of reporting, and there were international riots as well, which I haven't even gotten into, and I probably won't have a chance to do that. But it reminded me of another article that came to my attention yesterday, written by Ollie Nielsen. She's with the Media Research Center, and of course they do a great job of tracking the media and what the media is not talking about. And what the media is not talking about is who's funding all of this. Who is funding all of this? Are all these people wearing these masks, just, you know, good-hearted, leaving their jobs, going out volunteering for love of their cause? Not really. We saw a People's Climate March just the end of last week. People's Climate March. Anytime you see people or workers, you know what that means. And I bet Ollie knows what that means. Ollie joins us this morning. Thank you, Ollie, for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
You know, well, let me just tell everybody that your article is available at Newsbusters. People's Climate March Steering Committee got $36 million from Soros. All right, so Ollie, $30 million at least for that, at least the people that participated in the climate march. How do you find that out?
Oh, so what I actually did is on the People's Climate March website, it's peoplesclimate.org, I think. They list all of their partners, their entire steering committee. They had a 55-member steering committee, which was different groups that were making decisions for the march. And then they had an additional 800 partners. And I remember looking at that, and I was like, well, there's no way I'm going to make it through 800 partners to figure out, you know, how much of that, how many of them have been funded by Soros. So what I did was I just took the steering committee, and I ran it. I cross-checked it against the nonprofit tax forms that George Soros' Open Society Foundation has to submit every year, and that's public information. They're called 990s. And what I found was that one-third of the steering committee, 18 of the 55 members, had gotten $36 million between 2000 and 2014. And that's just the steering committee. That's not, you know, even looking at any of the 800 partners. And so that right there is a huge red flag, because you realize, okay, if one-third of the groups making the decision for this march have gotten that much from Soros, that means, you know, he's only going to fund them if they're pushing exactly the agenda that he wants, you know, his anti-American, anti-capitalistic agenda. And so then you look at that, and something else that I noticed in going through the steering committee is a lot of the groups weren't even climate-related. You know, you have the Center for Community Change and NAACP, Hip Hop Caucus, Center for Public Democracy. None of those are actually related to, you know, climate change or environmentalism or conservation or any of that. And so that shows, well, this wasn't actually a march about the climate, even though they claimed it was. It was really a march, just another opportunity to try to push that stereotypical same list of liberal policies.
And actually, you broke that down, Allie, just to put some flesh on it. The climate march was about increasing the minimum wage and, you know, making sure we have unions and that people are able to, you know, look, unions have been the avenue, the way in which communists have worked for a very long time. And I'm not saying that every union member even gets that. And I'm not saying that unions are bad, but people must understand that unions way back to Mao Zedong in China and the European communists were used as ways to build groups of people to bring have grievances and to cause disturbance. And for all of the good that they did, and I'm sure they did a lot of good because heaven knows there's enough corruption in large business and greediness that people need protection, but they were used to create chaos in countries and bring them down and overtake. And so when you see this emphasis on unions, just remember that's what communists like to do, and that's the vehicle they like to use. Then social justice and immigration, all of those, for the climate march. Ali, is this your kind of your thing that you do for MRC? Do you track the funding of these other organizations?
Oh, I do, yes. I do most of the primary work on the Soros Project, which is started out as figuring out what Soros has been funding, and then that kind of expanded out to include other donors as well. And then I actually have another project called Buying Bias. It's buyingbias.org, and that specifically looks at the funding behind nonprofit journalism because, you know, journalism is supposed to be unbiased. It's supposed to just tell the facts, but a lot of times when you have nonprofit journalists, or nonprofit outlets, they'll be funded by groups that have a specific agenda, and then you'll see that agenda cropping up throughout their research and their articles and whatever. So I go through and I just track who is funding that and, you know, how that agenda is cropping up.
You know what, I'm going to throw you a curveball a little bit, but I bet you know about this. In my inbox a couple of weeks ago, I got, a 90-page plan, and I believe it was sponsored by, written and provided by Media Matters, who, of course, monitors this show, all the other conservative shows. Media Matters, as I recall, is funded by Soros, at least in part. I don't know if you want to speak to that, Ali, but the idea of this 90-page treatise was how to attack and get rid of conservative voices on radio in media. And I think top on their list was Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, and then, of course, Bill O'Reilly, who they just succeeded to pull from Fox News by targeting his advertisers. And this is Media Matters, a, you know, supposedly independent news source. Well, I mean, what do you know about that, Ali?
Well, no, I know exactly the reports you were talking about. I actually had it sitting on my desk for a long time and, you know, periodically would go back to it and try to make it through some more between my projects. But yeah, that was basically a 90-page thing where the head of Media Matters and, you know, some colleagues were basically laying out, these are how we're going to use all of these different organizations. We're going to use our, you know, watchdog group, Media Matters. We're going to use our, our action group, all these nonprofits, 501c4s, to basically, like you said, try to get rid of conservatives in the media and, you know, discredit them or basically take them off the airwaves or whatever, so that there isn't that voice. And see, the difference between that and where I'm coming from is they do not want conservatives heard. They want conservatives silenced, and they don't want those views represented. Where I'm coming from is I say, you know what? People have liberal views. People have conservative views. People have moderate views. People have libertarian views. People have whatever, you know, all across the board. Those should all be fairly and accurately represented in the media. So it's not that only my side of the story should ever get told. It's that, no, both sides of the story should get told. The facts should be told. And people should be given all the information they need to be able to make the decision that they think is right. You know, they need all the information to know what's going on, and then they can accurately assess that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
But that's not the way it is right now, because, you know, the media is overrun by liberals. And if Media Matters had its way, it would just keep going that direction.
Yeah, but the irony is, here's an organization that's supposed to be a news organization trying to destroy opposing voices using Soros dollars, it seems to me. I don't know what the percentage of funding is, but you can certainly trace the funding to Media Matters from Soros. And you know what, that reminds me of another article that I read this morning, Ali. I just think the irony here is just rich. I never hear, now maybe it's happening, but I surely never hear about it, of anyone going after George Soros' money in this country using our tax law or anything else. I haven't heard about it. And yet the headline this morning is billionaire Robert Mercer, who was the financial backer for Breitbart News, for Heritage, There's just a ton of things. He spent, mm-hmm. I think, $22 million. Maybe MRC, too. The Mercer family has given a lot of money to conservative causes, so now guess it's going after him. It's the Internal Revenue Service, who are demanding a $7 billion in what they claim are back taxes. Now, I don't know the law, and I can't argue or defend Robert Mercer or condemn the IRS based on my knowledge of this particular story. But it just seems ironic to me that a billionaire who's helping conservative causes is now in the crosshairs of the IRS, but I don't think Soros is, unless you know something I don't know.
I'm not aware of anything going after him. And you know what I think is really interesting is he's Hungarian originally. And over the past couple months, Hungary, as a country, has actually started trying to push him out and trying to make it illegal for him to keep funding this college that he's founded there because they don't like him. They don't like what he's doing, what he's pushing politically. And, you know, back in, I think, the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, he was thrown out of Russia because Russia didn't like what he was doing. And if these countries are, you know, getting rid of him, pushing him out, you know, and that's not defending all of the policies of Hungary or Russia and saying, oh, look, they have it figured out. But if they look at him and say, wow, he's really undermining, you know, the rule of law and, you know, really messing things up here, we need to get rid of him, then you would think that it would be in the United States' best interest to, you know, not necessarily target him, but at least, you know, at least have journalists look into him and say, okay, if this is what other countries are thinking, what's he doing here? And at least ask that question and at least research that. But you don't see that happening. You don't see anyone talk about him. You know, you see them go after, like you said, the Mercers or the Koch brothers or whatever. But one of the biggest ironies that I see is a lot of the organizations, again, going back to the nonprofit journalism outlets, the ones that attack the Koch brothers hardest are also themselves funded by George Soros and the Rockefellers and all of these other liberal foundations. And you're like, maybe you should look at your own donors, the people that are funding you, when they've given so much more to all of these causes than, you know, the Koch brothers that you're, you know, whining about right now.
Yes, I think so, but I know they know exactly what they're doing, and they're doing the bidding of those donors, so there's no question about that. You know, and I have to say, just for people that maybe, I talk about Soros a lot, but you always have different listeners. George Soros has the most incredible on-record stuff we know about him. His father, they're Jewish, and his father cooperated with the Nazis during World War II. His background is not a good one. And Soros has destroyed economies of various nations, tanked markets. He has a terrible reputation, and he hates this country. And here he is, you know, a U.S. citizen using his billions to undermine and destroy us. And meanwhile, we sit back, and I guess the IRS is sitting back. And I would also say that John Koskinen, who took over and the bad deeds of the IRS have not stopped. Could I just say, under John Koskinen, and he was never impeached, he was never removed, and the targeting of conservatives has not stopped, as far as I have been told in Washington. So that's just another sideline on this story, and no wonder Soros is not in the crosshairs of John Koskinen's IRS, and something needs to be done about that. But Ollie, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and let me just say, we're going to put your article on our Facebook page so people can read it. It's People's Climate March Steering Committee got $36 million from George Soros. Ollie, great work, and hopefully we'll talk to you again.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, Sandy Rios coming up next. We're going to talk about that budget, and I also have a little addendum story about these May Day groups that I want to make sure I share with you. So don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You shall have no other gods before me. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In 1954, Americans lived under constant threat of nuclear attack from the USSR. When America's children practiced duck and cover in classrooms across the country, President Eisenhower realized that our pledge had no distinction from any other republic. After hearing a sermon on February 7th of that year, President Eisenhower signed a law adding the words, "Under God," to our pledge. The president recognized the true source of unity, of indivisibility, is unwavering submission to the God of the Bible. As we go about our day, let us all remember the only true source of national unity is submission to Almighty God.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hello, I'm Gary Robey, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday on American Family Radio. This one-hour program will lead you in a special time of worship and praise. We will focus on God's Word, spoken, and in music. Call to Worship has a different topic each week as we glorify God together. Be sure to join us at 5 a.m. Central each Sunday for a Call to Worship right here on American Family Radio.
Mom, what if somebody else prays at the same time I pray? Whose prayer does God hear?
He can listen to more than one prayer at a time.
What if a lot of people are praying at the same time? I bet he gets confused.
No, he's God, and he understands every prayer.
The National Day of Prayer, the first Thursday in May. A lot of people praying to a God who understands. A thought from the American Family Association.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. What do you think when you hear about sanctuary cities? No big deal? Listen carefully. The statistics are alarming. Sanctuary cities have released thousands of criminal, illegal immigrants back into our local communities. Behind these statistics are untold numbers of Americans who have been victimized, rapings and other crimes, which never would have taken place if our immigration laws were simply enforced. As cities refuse to cooperate with federal immigration laws, it not only endangers American citizens, but shows complete disregard for people like you and me and for every immigrant who followed the law and immigrated legally. May there always be compassion in our hearts, but may we not be duped. There are those who appear to have caring hearts for the least of these, but who have an agenda to destroy America from within. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at americandecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Talking with foreign leaders goes with the job of President of the United States. Such interactions with actual or potential adversaries, however, entail real risks if they conjure notions of personal relationships that are allowed to mutate or supersede reality-based national security policies. The ballyhooed bromance between President Trump and China's Xi Jinping is worrying in that regard. Mr. Trump's upcoming meetings with Russian despot Vladimir Putin and Turkey's would-be caliph Recep Tayyip Erdogan may be similarly fraught. And the president is now openly entertaining the possibility of a face-to-face meeting with North Korean tyrant Kim Jong-un. Barack Obama was properly criticized for extending the hand of friendship to assorted U.S. enemies without precondition. The world is a much more dangerous place because, to varying degrees, he did that. Donald Trump risked making it even more so by repeating Obama's mistake. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Police officers in riot gear try to clear downtown streets after a peaceful May Day march turns violent.
All persons must leave the area immediately.
This scene played out right after demonstrators started a large fire near a Max track. But by no means were these the first flames of the afternoon. At one point, demonstrators lit the American flag on fire. And watch this. Protesters break the window of a police cruiser and toss in a live flare. All afternoon, demonstrators battled officers. They tossed water bottles, soda cans, Molotov cocktails, and fireworks at the men and women in blue. Officers responded with flashbangs and other tactics.
before making more than two dozen arrests. We saw damage and vandalism to a number of buildings downtown, most notably City Hall, a jewelry store, the Target store, and the PacWest Center.
Scratch with this and it comes right, you know, comes right off pretty much.
This guy started the cleanup immediately, but overall, it'll take days before the city looks normal again.
And late tonight, we heard from the Portland Police Bureau. The total number of people arrested sits at 25. The youngest person, just 14 years old. The oldest, 44 years old. They're facing a number of charges tonight, including riot and disorderly conduct.
All right, so that's a report out of Portland from the May Day protests. Sandy Rios back with you. The Daily Caller has found out that these groups, the ones that have been organizing, at least to a great extent, these anti-right riots, has connections to NAMBLA, the North American Man-Boy Love Association. That's the organization that's all about, if you have kids, you might not want them to hear this, okay? It's all about advocating sex with children. It's just amazing. It is absolutely amazing. NAMBLA stands for the rights of young people to have consensual sex with whomever they want. One of their leaders, Chef, who I'm going to tell you about in a second, called for youth-controlled centers where adults can have sex with children. She advocates for the women's movement, the LGBT community, and progressives to unite behind NAMBLA's cause. They are front and center in these masked protests. The Antifa group, known as the Coalition to Defund Affirmative Action, Integration, and Immigration Rights, and Fight for Equality by Any Means Necessary, they call themselves By Any Means Necessary, has led several anti-right riots, including the one against the first one in Berkeley. Also, they were the ones involved in the failed attempt at Ann Coulter to speak at Berkeley. They're the BAM now, that's By Any Means Necessary. Their parent organization is the Revolutionary Workers League in Detroit, and they work directly with NAMBLA. The co-founder, Eileen Sheff, who I mentioned before, wants these youth-controlled centers, is a member of the Revolutionary Workers League, an admitted member of NAMBLA. Let's see, Shanta Driver, who is her former law partner, is the founder and co-chair, also part of the Revolutionary Workers League. That goes back to 1983. According to the Workers' Vanguard, which is a communist publication, she also identified herself to the Los Angeles Times as an activist with Reich Revolutionary Workers League in late 1995 while protesting in Berkeley. Remember that when you see workers, and certainly when you see revolutionary, it's communist. And boy, I tell you, we're just maybe going to have to strip off the careful phrases and recognize what it is we're up against here. There is a deep, effective, has been for a long time, communist movement in this country. And it started back in the 20s, but and maybe earlier, but they really, when Lenin started writing it, there really was a strong seed here. And we've been fighting it for decades. And of course, during the 60s and 70s, the riots of those times, the communists were very involved in all of that. And can we say Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers and others, our friend David Horowitz was one of them. David, of course, had a change of heart and came out and started writing against them. But they went underground, went into colleges and universities. I've said this many times, but I'm just going to have to say it again because I want you to understand. That's why our colleges and universities and our schools, the unions, have absolutely been totally infiltrated. And that's why our kids have been dumbed down so that their minds are pliable. Little pieces of, so we can send our boys to North Korea and they can take a poster and get arrested and be clueless about the kind of environment in which they should have been warned. But they don't know. They don't know. Our kids don't know what they don't know. They are absolutely ignorant. Ignorant. Our kids are ignorant and they don't even know it. Unless they're homeschooled, and God bless all of you homeschoolers out there. Yeah, those are harsh words. But I'm telling you, your kids are not learning hardly anything in public school. And then no wonder their minds are mush, and when they get to college, then they can be completely corrupted. And that seems to be happening, doesn't it? So, but I digress. Okay, so that's the background of these groups behind these anti-right riots involved with NAMBLA, North American Man-Boy Love Association. Isn't that delightful? And I mentioned to you this IRS investigation of Robert Mercer. And I told you that Mercer has spent $22 million, he and his daughter, Rebecca, supporting conservative causes. Thank God for them. Heritage Foundation. But I also wanted you to know that it was the Mercers who funded Breitbart's or Steve Bannon's production of that Clinton Cash book. Remember how powerful that was about the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons and their and the money? I mean, that is a powerful documentary, a powerful book. So I'm just saying, and now, you know, he's being audited by the IRS. It started, of course, before Trump was elected. And they want $7 billion from him, but not so much from George Soros. I haven't noticed, you know, Koskinen or any of the other past leaders who got away with murder against conservatives at the IRS and still evidently are getting away with it. John Koskinen is still in place. The House didn't remove him. Remember that? They had a chance, but just, you know, couldn't quite bring themselves to doing that. So we still have him. Thank you, Swamp, Paul Ryan, leadership. We really appreciate that. And just remember that the IRS is still, you know, hunting down conservatives, and they will continue till somebody stops them, but I'm just not quite sure who's going to. So anyway, I digress. Now, let's talk about this budget. I promised I'd get back to it. Let me remind you that the Washington Post headline on this is 8 ways Trump got rolled in his first budget negotiation. And then they enumerate their little 8 ways. And then CNS News, which we'll put this on our Facebook page, 1,665 pages, the GOP spending bill is longer than Obama's stimulus. It's approximately 350,000 words long. It's about twice as long as the Stimulus Act, known as the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Remember how we mocked that? How big that act was, how late it came out, no one could read it. Well, so we just, you know, the Republican leadership just did the same thing. And I want to read to you from Daniel Horowitz's article, which we'll also put on our Facebook page. This is something you need to read and share. It's not long, but it will equip you to know why many of us are so angry about this budget. Remember that the Republicans are, they say, they're scared to death to shut down the government. That's what they say, but I have to tell you that many of the people that I work with in Washington don't think that's really so much the case as is they really are in consort with many of their colleagues across the aisle. They don't really want a border wall. They never have wanted a border wall. Certainly Paul Ryan doesn't want a border wall. How icky for him. What would he say to his friend Luis Gutierrez, the leftist open borders pal that he traveled around the country with trying to push the Gang of Eight bill? What would he say to him if he funded a border wall? But that's an editorial remark on my part. I want to read this from Daniel. Betrayal beyond belief. Dim priorities funded, Trump's scuttled. With the omnibus deal forged at 2 a.m. this morning in Congress, this is essentially what has happened on a national level. People voted for a revolution to drain the swamp, and out popped a Democratic budget. In fact, one would be hard-pressed to find anything different about this budget than if Hillary would have gotten elected. Amazingly, the FY 2017 budget was deliberately held over until this year, instead of being completed in October or December of 2016, precisely so that the victor of the election would reap the spoils of war. Well, Democrats lost the election, but won this year's budget. The reason why it took an extra few days to forge the deal is because once Republicans telegraphed the message that they'd jettison every conservative priority from the budget, Democrats then held out for their priorities, and by and large, they got them. So what did they fund? Let's see, refugee resettlement and visas from the 6 countries from which Trump wanted to suspend them. Let's see, sanctuary cities are funded. Planned Parenthood is funded. Increased spending for lots of liberal priorities like EPA was saved from the proposed cuts in Trump's that were proposed by Trump. $295.9 billion in a bailout for Puerto Rico's irresponsible Medicaid program. Of course, they can't seem to get their act together financially in Puerto Rico, and the Democrats must bail them out every time, so they did. More H-2B low-skilled worker visas. $990 million, an increase for Food for Peace program in Africa. I don't know anything about that, but I can only imagine Food for Peace, what they're doing with that. Government-run health care, the Health and Human Services will see $2.8 billion boost in spending, $2 billion more to the National Institute of Health, which was supposed to be cut by the Trump budget. Department of Energy programs that Trump would have eliminated have received a modest spending increase. I could go on and on, but not funded. The border wall. They are giving $1.5 billion in additional border security funds, which I guess good for that. But they made sure that Donald Trump was not able to fulfill his campaign promise. That was important. That's why Nancy Pelosi's crowing. She's so happy about this. And rightfully so. Man, they won the store. The plus side of, let's see, it's a $1.16 trillion omnibus. It has everything we would have gotten had Democrats been in charge, after they successfully got Republicans to jettison any of Trump's priorities. So the one plus side, Daniel writes, is that the president did secure $15 billion in boost for the military. But Democrats always agree to spending more on the military if they, with offsetting the cost with cuts to non-defense spending. So that's the deal they secured. They got increased spending on the stuff they wanted in order to give him this money for the military. Well, we need the money for the military right now, so we'll be grateful for that. Nancy Pelosi's bragging. She bragged about blocking 160 GOP priorities in the bill. So, let's see. Daniel goes on to talk about, you know, next time. They're saying next time we're going to get our bill, our priorities. That's in September. You know, that is laughable. I mean, that's why I don't mean to laugh at Donald Trump, because I'm not laughing at him. I'm grateful to him. I think he's gotten a lot of good things done. But this is where he is. He's being played, because nothing will change at the end of the summer, except that they will be closer to the 2018 election, more scared than they usually are, which is kind of hard to quantify, isn't it? You think they're going to want a government shutdown in September? Really? Really? You think Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are going to change their mind about the border wall, about funding Planned Parenthood and all the others? You think they're suddenly going to give Donald Trump what he wants? Really? I just wonder. I just don't think so. And Daniel ends his article by saying, now we can understand why Mitch McConnell and the NRSC, that's the money, the people that give out money to people running for Senate, are threatening anyone who works for Judge Roy Moore in the Alabama Senate race. They don't want anyone elected to the Republican Party who will actually support the Republican budget and the GOP platform. So we're going to put that article on our Facebook page, and I hope that you will share it, because it's important that you understand what's happening here. And even though you may feel helpless, I do sometimes too, the point is we must get the swamp out of Washington. The ones that rule in the Senate, the ones that rule in the House, they must be gone. And I don't care if they've held your baby and smiled at you, or you've shaken their hands in your district. If they are not on the front lines fighting right now, they need to be gone, whoever they are, because we must get rid of them. It looks like the Obamacare repeal, I don't know if they're going to get the votes or not. It looks like they thought they were bragging that they had them, at least leadership was. They told it. President Trump, he said they were going to get it. Now it looks like they don't have the votes, and so they're twisting arms, doing everything they can, and it's really a 20% repeal of Obamacare in the long run, no matter what they say. Well, I could say more, but, you know, I got to go. But we'll be back tomorrow, and Fred Jackson will be in for me tomorrow, but I'll be back on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.